Hello, and welcome to Bostonian Rap. My name is Rachel Meiselman, and you are listening to me on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston. This is Boston's community radio station. As we always do, I'm going to go to a quick disclaimer, and then we're going to come back and jump right on in to tonight's show.
The following commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio at bnnmedia.org.
Hello, and welcome back to Bostonian Rap. Again, my name is Rachel Meiselman, and you are listening to me on WBCA LP 102.9 FM Boston, Boston's community radio station. So today I attended a meeting, a Boston City Council meeting, and it was just, It was sad. It was sad. There are several people who are on the council and they have no business on the council. And that's just where we're at. There was a time when we had people like Tim McCarthy. We had people like Frank Baker and Michael Flaherty. They just, you know, they were on the council until December 31st. We had people, I don't agree with Salvatore Sal LaMattina on a number of things, but I would take him over Gabriella Coletta. I would. We had Matt O'Malley, and Matt O'Malley is such a good kid. He has a good heart. He wants to help people. He does help people. And he's just a really good sort. We had people. We had Charles Yancey. Charles Yancey's wonderful. Charles Yancey did a lot, really. He actually did a lot. While he was on the council, a lot that people don't really properly recognize. But yeah, he did quite a bit. He did much more than Andrea Campbell. And so some people might be saying, well, of course he did a lot more than Andrea Campbell because he was on the council for such a long time, particularly compared to Andrea Campbell's relatively short tenure. I mean, I guess there is something to that. But I think that even if we carved out from Charles Yancey's time on the council, if we carved out a period of time that corresponds roughly to the same amount of time that Campbell was on the council, I think we're going to find that he really did do a lot more than she did. I think she's a better attorney general than city councilor. I really, truly do. And I can't forget Stephen Murphy. Stephen Murphy was definitely someone whose presence on the council I appreciated. He was certainly better than Anissa Asabi George because there was one year where Murphy finished fourth, and then Asabi George ran again, and she unfortunately knocked Murphy off. But at that point, the city council was already in a world of trouble. We had people like Ayanna Pressley on with the election of Anissa Asabi George and Andrea Campbell. It's just, the city council in Boston really became at a certain point a place where people went to launch themselves. That's really kind of what it is today. We have some people on the council at present that want to do the job, that understand what the job is. And so they do it. Ed Flynn is fantastic. And I don't say that just because I agree with a lot of what he says and does. It's not just down to that. This man knows, he understands what the job of a city councilor is, and he wants to do it. I look at, you know, these other people, and it's a springboard. It's a springboard for another office where they can get more money or more attention, or they'll have a higher profile. And that really is so unbelievably, immensely disrespectful to the residents of Boston. Residents of Boston deserve so much more. But then again, of course, we, the residents of Boston, have to get out and vote. We have to start voting en masse. That's just so critical. That's so very important. But today, yes, I was at a Boston City Council meeting. I was in the Ionella Chamber in the Boston City Council, which is on the fifth floor, for those who are a little less familiar with the geography and the operations and the venue of the Boston City Council, where they hold their meetings, where they hold their hearings. So I was in the Ionella Chamber, and that's where they do most of their business. And I went because I had been planning to go anyway, but I did end up hearing that there was going to be an effort to pass a ceasefire resolution. And I'm just done with these people. Let me be more precise in my language. These politicians, these elected officials that can't even take care of business in the district of a city, ward of a city, or if they represent the entirety of the city, they can't even take care of the business and the geographical space that they were elected to tend to, but they can worry about a part of the world that most of them, if not all of them, have never even been to. And that just absolutely blows my mind. We have so many problems in Boston, and I'm so glad that Councilor Flynn, Ed Flynn, articulated that, because we do. It's the Boston City Council. We're not in D.C. And even if, say, like, let's say I was in D.C. let's say I, you know, represented the 7th Congressional District, okay? I still think that the best way to affect change would be to vote on money to be sent over there, not only to help Israel fight Hamas, but also to make sure that there's money being sent to humanitarian aid workers in Gaza and also in Israel. That's how I would want to contribute. It's not just that these city councils, these town councils, that this is outside, well outside their purview, because at the end of the day, they can weigh in. But then it has to be, well, we're weighing in because we want to make a statement. It has to be clear that this is a symbolic gesture. And then if they're really interested in helping these city councilors, these town councils, then they work with their colleagues on state, and really what they would want to do is reach out to their colleagues on federal level. That's what you would do. You would reach out to your colleagues, you know, representation in the U.S. House, and you would also reach out to the states, to U.S. senators. That's what you would do. I feel like all this other stuff is an exercise in vanity. And with all the problems that we have, and the thing is I would be able to swallow, because I'm against any kind of ceasefire resolution. The hostages have to be returned, every single one of them. And Hamas must be dismantled. Hamas committed an attack. The brutality of it, the magnitude of it. We have not seen such a vicious attack against the Jewish people since World War II, since the Holocaust. Hamas is not a movement. The members of this movement, this genocidal movement, these are not people. They're animals, actually. But these aren't individuals that can be worked with to achieve peace of any kind, of any duration. This isn't about just bitter feelings and decades of hate and learning to love in peace. And we're all humans. And let's all hold hands. This is not what this is. You have people that are genocidal. You have people that in their charter that describes the movement's organization, it also provides their purpose. And so I'm not going to listen to Julia Mejia, who needs to sit down and think about doing something else besides pulling looks. I'm not going to listen to her and take her word or what she has to say about the war that is going on between Israel and Hamas, not the Palestinian people, but Hamas. I'm not going to take what she has to say over the words of Hamas leaders who have very clearly articulated no kind of equivocation that they want to kill Jews, not just in Israel, but around the world, Jews everywhere. But as I started to say, I would have a little less problem with a ceasefire resolution if these elected officials, if these town councilors, city councilors, were at least doing their jobs. And I'm not so sure all of them are in some of these other places like Somerville. I'm less familiar with the electeds on that legislative body. In Cambridge, though, I was disappointed. I do think that the Cambridge City Council is actually fairly good. And we certainly have some I think very good counselors indeed. I was nonetheless disappointed that a ceasefire resolution passed, but I know that if it did, there was a lot of thought and effort put into it. Because, again, I really do think that there's some very good counselors on that particular legislative body, and they know what they're doing. They're reasonable. They're level-headed. And I believe that they're doing their jobs. They're doing the jobs of counselors. They are serving their constituencies. So, again, while I'm against a ceasefire resolution of any kind, Cambridge, the passage of that resolution does not offend me as much as it does in Boston. It greatly offends me what took place today, because you have counselors who don't do anything. Rutsi released a statement. Rutsi Louis-Jean, who is the current council president, and she's certainly no Ed Flynn. She released a statement regarding the encampments, and she made it about free speech. I'm sorry, Rutsi, but try visiting an encampment. You take your staff, the bunch of you, the group of you, go to an encampment, and you tell the people whom you meet if you can interact with them. In Harvard, it's a little bit more difficult because Harvard Yard, where the encampment is, that has been closed off to the public. So if you don't have a Harvard ID, you're not getting on to the campus. You're not getting through to that encampment. You're not getting into Harvard Yard. So myself, for instance, even though I am an alumna of Harvard, I don't have an ID. And so because I did my undergraduate degree at Harvard, I actually, you know, I lived in Harvard Yard. I attended most of my classes that I attended throughout my 4 years there. Those buildings were in Harvard Yard. But again, the yard is closed off. And for some reason, Harvard believes that that is going to maybe make the encampment less toxic, maybe less disruptive to other students. I don't necessarily agree with that logic. But I suppose I can understand that. But in saying that that might be the rationale behind Harvard closing off Harvard Yard to the public, I'm giving Harvard, the administration, the benefit of the doubt, which I really don't feel like giving right now at this point in time. I'm not happy with my alma mater either. Trust and believe that. But, you know, getting back to what I was saying about the Boston City Council, it's just method on mile. Nothing has been done. Julia Mejia is in her, let's just see, she's in her, is this her third term? That woman, not once has she presented an idea, a solution of any kind. To my knowledge, she has never gone down to the mile and tried to talk with people at the shelter, people on Atkinson Street. And so for people who are less familiar with the geography on Method on Mile, Atkinson Street is probably the absolute worst. And it's you know, you have right before Atkinson Street, a part of it anyway, it turns into another street. It goes past, I would say, the headquarters for the sheriff of Cefacone. I think that's what it is, that building. You have what's called a comfort station. And, you know, they painted it nice colors and, you know, I guess try to make it nice and cheerful. But there's nothing cheerful about that street. And there's nothing cheerful about harm reduction, evidence of which you can see if you go down that street. You'll see people that they're shooting up. And they're allowed to shoot up, and they're given paraphernalia with which they can shoot up. But they can't shoot up right in front of the comfort zone, the comfort center. So it's just, it's really, the whole thing is just, it's a bit of a joke, a particularly bad one. But Atkinson Street, though, is it remains bad. All of Methadone Mile is bad. And we now have several Methadone Miles. We do. There are different places in the city where if you want drugs, you can get pretty much anything you want. And Erin Murphy, who is completely useless, she had been the chair of the standing committee, because the Boston City Council has what's called standing committees. And these standing committees, they, what's the word I'm looking for? I was going to say look to oversee. Maybe I can use the word oversee. They oversee specific issues. And it's not that the other counselors cannot weigh in on these particular issues. Of course not. Of course they can. It's not necessary to be the chair or the vice chair or a member of a particular standing committee to say something, because ultimately everything that comes up for a vote, it's something that all the city councilors, all of their voices have to be heard, yay or nay. But one would hope, one would think that if there is a council that is chairing a standing committee on a particular issue, that that issue would be addressed in some kind of substantive manner. Erin did absolutely nothing. And this is someone who wants people to thunderously applaud her because she's in recovery. And you know what? I wouldn't wish addiction on my worst enemy. That she's in recovery, that good for her. But I have a problem with someone who is in recovery, who's going to talk about the need to do something on Methadone Mile, who was very much in the position to do something and still is, and has done absolutely nothing. She has not presented a single solitary idea of her own. And I'm not picking on Erin Murphy, because that's what Erin Murphy will say, or her sister. I almost feel like we have 14 city councilors, Erin and her sister. You know, her sister's the 14th. But it's talking about someone who's not only on the city council, but was the chair of the standing committee that oversees the issue of addiction, substance abuse, and any corollary issues. And now she's the vice chair. So, okay, where are your ideas? What are you going to do? She did a walkthrough of a shelter that's right on Atkinson Street. And she did it like in the run-up to her last election. And I remember thinking to myself, why didn't you do this after you first got elected? Or she could have even done this when she was running for re-election, or not running for, when she ran because she ran in 2019 and she finished sixth. So she ran again in 2021. So she could have, you know, during while campaigning to get on the council in 2021, that election cycle, she could have done a walkthrough. She could have visited the shelter. Didn't do it. Hasn't done a darn thing. Hasn't moved the needle a single solitary bit. Hasn't said a darn thing of substance. Nothing. And let's talk about Tanya Fernandez Anderson, who just had to have a ceasefire resolution. And so this go around, it looks like she was working more with Jews on the political left who supported ceasefire resolution. And so then that was her cover. So no one could say, oh, Tanya, this is, what you're doing isn't right. This is anti-Semitic. It's like, well, gee, how could I be anti-Semitic? Look at all the Jews I'm working with. Whatever. But let's talk about Tanya Fernandez Anderson, shall we? A lot of the closures, or several of the closures of Walgreens right in her district. So I'm not obviously going to blame her for not doing anything about the closure of the CVS in her district, which when it was open, it was like a five-minute walk, if that, from Boston Medical Center. I mean, that happened well before she got on the council. But she was on the council when the Walgreens that's across from the right in Dudley Square. Sorry, guys, I still say Dudley Square. Some other people might say Nubian. But the Walgreens right in Dudley Square, and it's right across from the building where a lot of the administrative offices for Boston Public Schools is located. Okay, so that's in her district. Then another Walgreens closed, and it's over on Warren Street. So it's closed now. You go by, it's sad. It's sad. That's not a Walgreens that I had ever shopped in, or maybe like once or twice, but it wasn't one that I frequented. But it's still sad to see just an empty building there. And I'm sure it's not going to stay. I mean, I know it's not going to stay empty, but let's get real. It closed because people were shoplifting. That was a serious issue. It doesn't matter if it's a mom and pop store or a big corporation. And if people are trying to say to themselves, well, it's not really a big deal because, you know, it's a big corporation and they make plenty of money and blah, blah. Look, a business is a business. And when you're talking about shoplifting, what it comes down to is you have a situation where if it's a business, like Walgreens or CVS, which is a big business, it's a chain store, that type of business can sustain itself for a little bit longer, for a lot longer even, than a mom and pop store. But make no mistake, sooner or later, if the shoplifting doesn't stop, the business, you know, headquarters, the big bosses are going to decide, you know what, let's just pull the plug. And instead of addressing that issue, Tanya just reached for the race card, and she wasn't the only one. Ayanna Pressley reached for it. Well, Ayanna doesn't even have to reach for the race card. It's just always right there. And I'll go one step further. If Ayanna cannot inject race, something about race into the discussion, and oppression and trauma and victims, then you won't hear anything from her. She's going to keep quiet. But, you know, over time, she has become quite creative. And so she has learned to inject race into everything. Victimhood and trauma and oppression into everything. Everything is a matter of equity. Everything is a matter of justice, economic justice, food justice. I'm waiting for her to talk about poverty justice. And that'll be some kind of word salad about how everyone deserves a chance to live with dignity and, of course, equity. And that's that. You know, there won't be any solutions. There'll just be a lot of talk about it. But, you know, maybe she thinks she has that covered for the time being, you know, because she talks about economic justice. But the point is, it's race. Everything's about race. So Tanya reached for the race card. She didn't address that. The fact that you have a lot of people who are drug addicted and they're shoplifting to feed their habit. Now, listen, I'm always going to stand with the drug community, the recovery community, rather. I've always said that. I will continue to say that because it's true. I will always stand with the recovery community. And I think it's very important that we destigmatize and we continue to do work in that area so that people will not feel like they cannot say, I need help. Because when you're an addict, who and what you are is completely broken down. A lot of people feel deeply ashamed. Most addicts feel deeply ashamed. And so the idea of reaching out for help, a lot of people just, they can't. They feel humiliated. They feel embarrassed. And yes, of course, they feel the shame. And so we want to continue to do work so that people, no matter how far they have fallen, that there's a message that can reach them wherever they may be, that they too deserve help and that they're worthy of it. Having said that, we also have to address what the addicts do to the community. They're not just hurting themselves. If they're violent, depending on what drugs they're taking, they could hurt somebody physically. When they steal, they hurt businesses. And there's a whole host of other behavior that is destructive to their respective communities. But we're talking here about shoplifting. And that was one of the reasons why these Walgreens were closing. And CVS is in trouble, too, in some places. For the same reason. Shoplifting, the addicts. And then you have people now that they're not struggling with substance abuse issues. But they are just going to take. They're just going to grab what they need. And walk out the run out of the store, walk out of the store. And we can't condone that. And I'm not just talking about teenagers. We're talking about adults. And then the teenagers see it, so they're going to do it. It's a disgrace. I mean, I taught for so many years. And the irony is that I was working in the part of the industry where students were seen as customers. So it was very business oriented. At the same time, it's the part of the industry where teachers are often the most poorly paid if you compare them to other parts of the industry. And so quite often I didn't have a whole lot in my pocket besides lint and some fuzz. And yet I paid, I worked to pay my rent and my bills and put food on my table and clothes on my back. And when I couldn't afford things, you know, if it was between paying bills, you know, meeting my financial obligations and maybe buying this or going on a trip, I made the adult choices. I pulled in the belt. I battened down the hatches. It never occurred to me to steal. We can't condone that. Did Tanya Fernandez Anderson address any of that? Of course not. We just say it's racism and it's all boof, abracadabra, the problem is gone. We accuse Walgreens of being racist. When CVSs start closing in her district or anywhere else, we'll accuse CVS of being racist. You know, because we don't do anything like personal accountability anymore. So we do that, and then the problem, poof, it's gone. We don't have to talk about it. We don't have to deal with it. And then we start talking about pharmacy deserts. We create words, right? We create words because if we're going to have a word salad, we have to have words to put in that salad. So we start talking about pharmacy deserts, all right? We don't talk about addicts and we don't talk about shoplifting. No, that's not sexy. What's sexy is pharmacy deserts. And then we can start pumping money into minority-owned pharmacies. Oh, yeah, see? And so that's further gets us away from the problem at hand, which is people are engaging in behavior that is hurting their communities. And there has to be some kind of accountability. I mean, if Tanya really insisted on talking about racism, she could maybe talk about how seemingly the only place that a lot of these elected officials can vote or move to put addicts are in places where the majority of the community is Black and brown. But see, we're not going to do any of that, right? Because that would involve actually knowing the issues, having intellectual and moral courage, and actually trying to do the job of serving the community and working to better it. All right. So I haven't heard from Tanya on any of these issues. Haven't heard from Tanya about our children, Black and brown children, going to school on the mile. And we have some real young children. It's unconscionable. We're not hearing from Tanya. We're not hearing from her nearly enough about how college students in her area, I would say probably Northeastern is one of the biggest offenders, if not the biggest, of displacing individuals and families from apartments. Okay. We're not really hearing from her on that front. There was a part of Roxbury, Fort Hill. I used to live over there. And unlike Mission Hill, and don't come at me, I always have to say this, I consider Mission Hill, I know it's recognized as its own neighborhood, but I consider it a part of Roxbury. Don't come for me. And I'm people do like, oh, I heard you said this on your show, and you don't come for me. Just don't. You know, Mission Hill, you go into Mission Hill, and it's just, you have so many college students, and they are so disrespectful. They hold their parties. They, you know, they go and live in these apartments. They don't take care of them. There's all this trash. And it's just, and moving in day, forget it. When they move in, there is, it's just piles of garbage. And it's just, whew, I could do a whole show just on that. And it's nothing new. It's been going on for years. And there hasn't been enough muscle put in to cracking down on this, and that has to change. But again, that could be a whole show unto itself. But living in Fort Hill, when I was living there, was a bit of a relief because at the time, there weren't many college students. Well, that's changed. That's changed. Haven't heard much from Tanya on that front. And recently, I understand that the migrants, and that just seems to be a catch-all phrase, but for purposes of simplicity, I'll use it. But not all the migrants are migrants. I mean, we have some illegal aliens there. I know this. It's not just people who move around and, you know, seasonal work and, you know, they might be from another state. They've come here looking for work or whatever. No, I mean, we have some people who are illegal. But again, for purposes of simplicity, I'll use the catch-all phrase migrant. The migrants that were put in the Melnia Cass Recreational Center over in Roxbury, it's right in Fort Hill. I understand that they're going to be moved to another place. But their presence in that recreational center, that recreational community center, I feel that should have been Tanya's big grand opportunity to speak up for Black and brown people. I mean, she's there in Boston City Council meetings talking about Rootsy Lujan, queen. No, Rootsy's no queen. Trust me, trust and believe that. But she's in there, oh, queen, you know, Black and brown people, la, 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 la. Well, why didn't you speak up when Black and brown people were being displaced? And I don't care if it's one family, or 10 families, or 5 families. One family is one family too many. Okay, so Tanya's not taking care of her business. And there are many other examples. And that's the thing. People might not like what I have to say. That's fine. People might not like the delivery of what I have to say. That's fine. But I'm not going to blindly criticize someone or people. I give precise examples. So then, presumably, there can be a debate, an intellectually honest debate that can ensue. So, well, Rachel, I don't agree that with that example you gave because actually I have done something on that issue. Da, 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 you know, I've done this, this, and this. And then, you know, we can say yay, yes, no, maybe find a common ground. But I'm not just going to say, oh, this counselor is a poopy head. No, I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say I'm unhappy about this. I don't like this person. This is why. And so Tanya Fernandez Anderson, as I continue to stress, absolutely had to weigh in on the Israel-Hamas war, but she can't take care of her own district. Got it. Okay. It blows my mind. Then you had Julia Mejia. Let's bounce back to Julia Mejia. Julia Mejia really has no business on the Boston City Council. And for a long time, I had a soft spot for Julia because I've known Julia for a decade. Okay? I've known that woman for a decade. And so even when there have been times when I've been very upset with her, I've still said to myself, yeah, but I still have a soft spot for her and we've known each other for a long time. I mean, I knew Julia when Julia stood up to say things in a crowded room and people were like, oh, I think the program's over. We can leave. Where's the exit now? And I was one of the people who actually stayed in my seat and gave that woman respect and listened to what she had to say. Okay? So I know Julia Mejia. I have always respected Julia Mejia. But Julia Mejia has not always respected me or other people. And now I'm definitely not happy with Julia Mejia. And that soft spot, nah. So she, of course, had to get up and say something because it ain't a meeting if Julia Mejia isn't, I don't know what. I was looking for a word that could rhyme, but, you know, it's not a city council meeting or hearing, though, if Julia Mejia doesn't get up at least once and lets people know at home what she's wearing. If Julia Mejia doesn't get up at least once to talk to this one or that one, generally it's Tanya Fernandez Anderson. And it's the whole routine is old. I don't care what Julia Mejia wears to the Boston City Council meetings, hearings. She could show up naked for all I care. As long as, I would care. I would say something. But, you know, like, my point is, while I want the city council's male and female to be appropriately attired, and if they're fashionable too, that's great. You know, that's wonderful. But you got to do your job. And I don't know what she's done. I mean, like Tanya Fernandez Anderson, she hasn't, you know, I'll say it again. She has not said or done anything. I said like her third term. She's not done anything to address Methadone Mile. And she's counsel for the whole city. She only could acknowledge West Roxbury when her former bestie, Kendra Lara, was the D6, District 6 city councilor. But before that, I mean, it was like she didn't even know where West Roxbury was located. She didn't even go into three quarters of the city. You know, and she bangs on about all means all. What does that mean? When you're excluding so many of your constituency on a daily basis, when you don't know what's going on in three quarters of the city, I mean, really, do you think then that you should be weighing in on what's going on between Israel and Hamas? Like, seriously, really? Well, she got up and it was pure comedy gold. She prefaces what she's going to say. Well, I wasn't going to say anything. Then she starts talking, and like 5 days later, she was still talking. And it's like, seriously, like, stop. Just stop talking. This isn't about we join hands and, you know, we'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. And then we all break open a can of Coke or, you know, a bottle of Coke and everything's fine. Hamas are genocidal thugs. They want to eliminate Jews worldwide. They don't care about their own people. They'll put key parts to their operations, like, you know, a command center, they'll put it in a hospital. They'll put the other strategic arms of the movement. Well, I can say the government, you know, the governing, you know, because there are it's a movement that governs over, you know, that's now a governing body, that has been a governing body. But they'll put like strategic, important, critical parts of the governing body in a school. An elementary school. This isn't about people learning to love each other. This isn't about people just agreeing that there should be peace in seeing the humanity. We're talking about cold-blooded, genocidal killers. It's just, I don't know what alternate universe Julia Mejia lives in, when it comes to foreign policy or when it comes to this issue, but it's she obviously doesn't know what she's talking about. And then there was Ruzi Luijun, the council president. And I'm done with Ruzi. I told one of her staffers today, I'm done. The three reasons why I'm done with Ruzi. I went to Ruzi to see if she could help out, donate anything of any amount, of any kind, to summer camps that I raise money for every year. She couldn't even get back to me. But she'll be the first one to talk about black and brown people. I don't want to hear it anymore. Or as a Haitian American, don't want to hear it anymore. I'm over it. Then I brought a complaint to her about a city councilor who engaged in behavior that was totally unacceptable. Ruzi broomed it. But again, Ruzi will be the first one to talk about racism against people of color. And what happened to me? As far as I'm concerned, it was definitely an act of racism. And if I could have gone to anybody else, I would have. But unfortunately, I say unfortunately because if you don't have a good council president and there's an issue with a city councilor, then you're fit to be tied because that disciplining a city councilor or at least talking to a city councilor about an issue that he or she may be having with other councilors or with a member of his or her constituency, that is strictly the purview of the council president. Ruzi didn't want to deal with it. Okay. I'll remember that. And then the third thing was today, well, as a Haitian American, you know, and she was just going off, like she was doing her little routine, putting in a little performance and talking about how essentially, to fully articulate, to express fully the horrors of what's happening to the Palestinians, it wasn't, the paper on which the resolution was printed was insufficient. And she was just really, like I said, putting in a little performance. She referenced Erin Murphy, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. And it was just, I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, well, she's going through all of this. Haitian American. Okay, you're an American. You were born in Boston. What do you know about Israel and the Palestinian territories? You have never been there. And how does being a Haitian American, how does being American of Haitian descent allow you some special particular insight to what's going on in Israel, the war between Israel and Hamas? It was just outrageous. And then Erin, she was one of the two counselors, along with Ed Flynn, she opposed the resolution. And as loud as she can be at all these other times, when it came to opposing this, you could barely hear her say no. Really, I'm just this council I'm done with. But that's all I have time for today. I will certainly be talking about this issue, anti-Semitism, that is, and how and why elected officials should act and react. I look forward to hanging out with you, as always, next week. Until then, take care of yourselves, and I'm going to say toodaloo, goodbye.
The preceding commentary does not necessarily reflect the views of the staff and management of WBCA or the Boston Neighborhood Network. If you would like to express another opinion, you can address your comments to Boston Neighborhood Network, 3025 Washington Street, Boston, Massachusetts, 02119. To arrange a time for your own commentary, you can call WBCA at 617-708-3215 or email radio@bnnmedia.org.